So I knew that I was going to be speaking on a very challenging topic this evening. So to strengthen my ethos, I brought my special mid-70s Bible. Keep on trucking with Jesus. With the sun behind it. And I thought that would make you want to listen to everything I had to say. Let's pray. Father, thank you for our time. We surrender it to you. I ask you to watch over us. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. So I'm going to be talking about politics and American politics, and that's not, for the most part, that's not an exegetical sort of thing, right? But the principles that the Bible teaches do apply. And so what I want to do is give the baseline biblical principle for Christians to think through this challenging time we're in. Then I'd like to talk a little bit about the practical state of things, where the election is. And then how you can best prepare yourself for what is likely to happen. So in Proverbs 20, verse 10, it says, divers weights, that's not scuba divers, but various weights and various measures, both of them are alike, abomination to the Lord. So divers weights and measures, various weights and measures, are what merchants use to cheat. So if they'll have a different set of weights and measures. So if you want to buy something from the butcher, he wants to skin you, he puts one set of weights on the scale. If he doesn't want to do that, then he uses the honest set of weights or puts a thumb on the scale. And not to pick on butchers, because this happens in every vocation known to man, people cheat. People cut corners. People fudge the numbers. People lie, and to jigger with the mechanism to make the person pay more or to rob the person of what was rightly his, it says here, is an abomination to the Lord. Now, I'm saying this without going into any analysis yet of who is cheating whom. Right? In other words, we should establish this principle without regard to who is going to wind up inaugurated on January 20th as the next president. Is it going to be Donald Trump, or is it going to be Joe Biden? So we don't know that, and we should keep that out of our thinking entirely as we're contemplating this. Do this as a thought experiment. You've got a button in front of you, and if you push that button, you will guarantee an honest election. All the votes will be counted honestly. There will be nothing under the table. If the allegations of dishonesty were all false, and it was an honest election already, and that's what you got, or it was a dishonest election, and you hit your button, and you fixed it. Now, you have to hit that button, as if you're a thinking Christian, you have to hit that button not knowing who's going to win as a result. Right? You have to say, if someone said, your guy's going to lose. If you hit that button, your guy's going to lose. If you go along with it, if you succumb to that temptation and you refuse to hit the honest election button because you want your guy to win more than you want an honest election, that means what you're doing, the way you're thinking, is abominable to the Lord. God hates that kind of thing. All right. So the thing that we have to resolve is to make sure that we define for ourselves the fact that a dishonest election is not defined as one in which my guy lost. So if my guy lost, there must have been cheating, then that is simply a way of getting your thumb on the scale beforehand, right? And this begins very early. You drop a fly ball in Little League, and the grass was wet, and a bee distracted me, and the sun was in my eyes. When you're making excuses like that, what happens is you start making excuses throughout all of life. So if something bad goes wrong, then my guy lost because the other side cheated. Now, here's the that's the principle. Honest Christians should be committed to process first, because if we don't have an honest process, if we don't count the votes honestly, if we don't insist on honesty in elections, if that's not our standard, then what we are is partisans as opposed to citizens. We want, as Christians, to be Christian citizens as opposed to Christian partisans. If you're a partisan first, you want the Republicans to win, and if America wins too, that'd be great, but you want the Republicans to win. That's partisanship. If you're a citizen, if you're a Christian citizen, you want the country, the nation as a whole, to be blessed. And the nation as a whole is going to be blessed if we have integrity in our decision-making processes. So that's the baseline biblical principle. That's the fundamental principle. You should care more about honesty and integrity in elections than you care about your preferred candidate winning. So that's number one. Number two, where are we exactly? What's the situation? Well, if I knew that, I'd be richer than I am. Well, I can tell you roughly where we are. It's hard to say exactly because there's so much going on. But there are certain swing states, certain states that could go either way, where the election was close enough, where it could go either way depending on how the votes are counted or recounted or discounted, right? Those states are Nevada, Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. Now, depending on how this goes, basically, currently, according to the popular accounting, what the network news, what the networks report, Biden has won enough states to put him over 270 votes in the Electoral College, meaning that he would be elected by the Electoral College when they meet. So, for those of you who didn't have civics growing up, here's a basic, a rudimentary lesson. The Electoral College means that the system of the Electoral College means that we vote for the president by state. We vote for the president by state, and the states have a certain amount of electoral votes based on their population. So the popular vote across all 50 states doesn't determine who is the president. So Hillary Clinton beat Donald Trump in the last election by several million votes in the popular election, but because Trump won certain key states, he won the Electoral College. So if Hillary Clinton wins California, which any Democrat's going to win anyway, it doesn't matter if she wins it by 10 million votes or 10 votes, right? She gets the same number of electors from California, even if her margin is really, really wide. Okay, so you could have someone barely carry all the red states and someone conduct a blowout in all the blue states, meaning that the popular vote would go to the loser. Okay, so that's the Electoral College system. Where we are is, if any of the current challenges, if the lawsuits are successful, and depending on which states this happens to, but I think it's about two or three of those states that I listed, if those votes are reversed or discounted or set aside, then Biden drops below 270 votes. That means that neither Biden nor Trump were elected, have enough votes in the Electoral College to be elected president. The U.S. Constitution anticipates the possibility of that happening, and I think it's actually happened once before. And when that happens, when nobody gets enough electoral votes, the election is thrown into the House of Representatives in Congress. But the House of Representatives is, they don't count the votes in the House the way they normally do. In the Senate, we vote by state. There's two senators from every state. In the House, it's direct, it's sort of population-based. So what would happen if the election is thrown into the House, they would vote more like the Senate does. They would vote by state, basically. And that would mean if the Republicans stuck together, if it goes into the House, then Donald Trump would be elected. Okay? Now, the lawsuits or the challenges fall into different categories. One category is a process challenge. Another category is a cheating challenge. And then the third one would be a cheating challenge / pig's breakfast. Okay, so walk through these. A process challenge would be this. The Secretary of State in Pennsylvania arbitrarily extended the number of days past the election that absentee or mail-in ballots could be collected. That is being challenged in a court of law. The allegation is that it was illegal to do that. It was not constitutional, didn't have the authority to do it. And so consequently, if that suit is won, then all the ballots that were gathered after that point in time would be discounted. Okay? So that's not an allegation of cheating in the dead of night. That's an allegation that someone exercised authority they didn't have. And so and that's what happened in Pennsylvania. And if that challenge is upheld, and let's say it goes up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court decides, yeah, that's right, you don't get to do that, then Pennsylvania or it could go Pennsylvania or it could go the Philadelphia area, different things could happen, then that would take away from Biden's electoral vote total. Or you could say they cheated a bunch in the dead of night. These voting machines were hooked up to the internet and they just dumped a bunch of votes in the dead of night. That would be if you can identify what votes, let's say they do a forensic recount. There's a difference between a recount and a forensic recount. A recount is when on election night, they bundle up votes, and then they have these bundles of votes, of ballots, and on the outside, they'll say Biden this many, Trump this many. And when they do a recount, they just count the bundles. A forensic recount means you unpack the bundles, and you have to get a court order to be able to do that, and you go through the votes one by one. That's a forensic recount. So let's say they cheated, and we can identify that there was a massive ballot dump in the dead of night. There were 200,000 ballots that were dumped. We know what ballot those votes are on, and it goes to court, and they discount those ballots. So what they do is they discount those ballots, and then they just do the math again, and who won this time, right? But the third, the pig's breakfast situation, is where everything is so jumbled up that you can't unscramble the egg, right? So they counted the ballots and then threw them away, or they mixed them all up, or they lost them, or there's no way to undo or retrace everybody's steps. It's just a pig's breakfast, and they know that there was cheating, but they don't know to what extent. What could happen there is you just say, okay, Philadelphia, you don't get to vote. We're just gonna disallow this whole thing. And that could have the effect of dropping, together with a few other states, of dropping the vote tally below 270. Okay, that's where we are. Now, how are Christians to think about this? And remember what I said, the first principle was you want to think about it honestly. Nobody can think about it objectively, really, but because nobody is standing on a balcony in the sky looking down on earth with no vested interest. You've got interests and you've got wishes and desires. You want it to go one way or the other. So nobody's objective in that sense, but you can be honest, right? You can be honest where you would make the decision, you'd push the button even if you knew that meant your guy was going to lose. The fact that he's your guy means that you're not objective. The fact that you'd push the button anyway means that you're honest, okay? So how are we to process all these things? I've been watching, I've been following all the stories, and there are some wild ones. I've been following all the stories fairly closely, and I'm going to divide supporters of Biden and Trump up into four categories, not two, okay? I showed you three fingers, two fingers. So in four categories, there are the Biden-supporting partisans and the Biden-supporting citizens, the Trump-supporting partisans and the Trump-supporting citizens. With me? Now, we don't have to go into what percentage of each group we're not saying 50-50 or 90-10 or anything. It just, there's these four categories. There are Biden supporters who believe that it was an honest election. They would push the honest election button. They would say, I want an honest election. And their perception of this is that Donald Trump is a sore loser, and he's just challenging it because he lost. And as someone who has been watching this fairly closely, I have to say that Trump does have that in him. He has that capacity, shall we say. And I say that because if you remember the night of the Iowa caucus when Trump was running against the other Republicans, Trump lost the Iowa caucus and he lost it to Ted Cruz. And part of the reason alleged was that Ben Carson was talking about dropping out of the race. And some of the Cruz people repeated that the night of the voting, and some people argued it might have had an effect on the voting, but Carson hadn't dropped out yet, and you know it was one of those election night things. Well, Donald Trump took it with an ill grace and said that that Ted Cruz stole the election in Iowa, and he demanded a recount or a redo, or you know. So he does have that in him. Trump does have the capacity to say, it was cheating because I lost. So, a Biden supporter, an honest election Biden supporter who looks at that has grounds for thinking that that might be one of the, oh, he's just fighting and appealing and suing and doing all this stuff because he's a sore loser. Well, that, even if you don't believe that that's what's going on, it's a plausible hypothesis, okay? It's a plausible hypothesis. You're not crazy. You're not crazy for thinking that. But having said that, if Donald Trump is the sort of person who would challenge and want to redo just because he lost, what do you think someone like Donald Trump would do if there was actual flagrant cheating against him? He would burn the world down. Right? He's not going to take that sweetly. So that should be kept in mind also. Then you've got the honest Trump supporters who would push the button, and I've seen a number of conservative folks who would much, much rather Trump win, who have been pointing out holes in some of the things alleged in these, you know, not every story that, believe this or not, not every story you read on the internet is true. Not everything that floats by you is the case. So for example, in one of the early legal maneuvers in Michigan, the Trump team listed a bunch of townships that were where the registration of the number of people voting was way out of proportion to the number of people registered. The problem was, that a bunch of these townships were in neighboring Minnesota, not Michigan. So you can, that's a blunder, and you can, in charity, say that there was a volunteer from Texas who came up, MI, MN, right next door to each other. It's all tundra, all tundra and confusing. And so he just made a mistake. But that's a good example of something like that gets stated. All these Michigan townships, it was in Minnesota, not Michigan. But that was something I learned reading a conservative website that would have preferred that Biden lose, right? So there are people who are conservative, who are Trump supporters, who would rather tell the truth than lie to get Trump in. So you got honest Biden supporters, and I'm not approving of any of the Democratic policies being supported, but there are Democrats who believe that it was an honest election and they want it to be an honest election, and there are Trump supporters who are the same way. But then you've got the partisan Biden supporters and the partisan Trump supporters. I do think there's a difference here, because as I've been watching this and watching it fairly closely, I think that the Biden supporters who are partisans would do anything to get Biden in there. And I believe that the Trump supporters who are partisans would believe anything. Okay, so Biden supporters would do anything, the Trump supporters would believe anything. If it helps my guy, I'm going to pass it on. I'm going to repeat it. Well, at some point, it becomes an Eighth Commandment issue, right? Ninth Commandment issue. At some point, you're bearing false witness when you just pass on a story without verifying it. So, with that caveat, let me tell you a story I'm not passing on. I'm not published on this or written on it, because I'm in the process of trying to verify it before I publicize it, right? So I'm telling you this, what I've read. I've not confirmed it yet. And I want to confirm it before I pass it on. So you're not helping me if you take this story and pass it on like it's gospel, because I don't know yet. But I've read today and yesterday that Dominion, the voting system, the people that make the voting system, are a company owned by a Swiss bank, and the Swiss bank has a quarter interest in the ownership, and the other three quarters are owned by the government of China, okay, the Communist Party in China. Now, if that's the case, it's not a smoking gun. That's sort of a smoking howitzer. And you think, golly. So I'm about ready to go on the warpath just if they have voting machines that are capable of being hooked up to the internet. I think, don't you guys know about human nature at all? You know, at all? So there's a problem there. But then if they are hooked up, and then if they're hooked up and their servers feeding votes in from all over the world, and China's doing this, then you've got this horrendous situation. But here's the problem. The problem is we have the state of political discourse in America has gotten to the point where it is so toxic that I don't see any political way out. If Biden is inaugurated in January, there'll be about 70 million people who believe that he stole the election. Okay? If Trump hangs on to office and he's sworn in a second time, there will be about 70 million people who believe that he stole the election. And there will be no talking about it. So if I believed, for example, that if I believed that this the election really was honest, and that there were, of course, there were instances of fraud, but no unusual levels of fraud, and that it didn't swing the election. If I believed that, I honestly believed that, and I wanted the conservatives on the other side to calm down, I wouldn't call them idiots. You're idiots for believing, because some of these things, some of these stories look and smell really bad, right? So I watched the testimony of a UPS driver or truck driver who drove a truck full of ballots from New York to Pennsylvania. And he said, my truck was full of ballots, and so what are Pennsylvania votes doing being shipped in from New York? It excites comment. It raises questions. Now, let's say there were perfectly good explanation for it, like the Minnesota-Michigan explanation, or another, there were a flurry of stories a few weeks ago saying there were all these dead people in Michigan voting. You may have heard of those, all these dead people voting. Well, I thought, man, that's bad. This lady born in 1898 voted, and that seems like a not good thing. Well, the problem was, you might think, what possible explanation could you have for something like that? Well, there's a reasonable one, and that is when all the records in the voting offices were being switched over to computers in the 70s, what they were doing is just putting arbitrary birth dates in, like 1900, just an easy birth date. And at the time, it didn't make any difference. 50 years later, it makes quite a difference, because that person who's still voting, they were 20 then, now is, you know, well, they wouldn't be 20, but that's another thing. Basically, you could account for something like that. Okay, that's a reasonable, plausible explanation. But I don't think that people who see these things stack up are disloyal or unpatriotic or morons for wanting to do a forensic exam of the voting or the ballots or the machines. Dominion, Dominion, which runs most of the voting, runs most of the voting machines in use in the United States, has said that they are posing a investigation of their machines because the information of how they count votes is proprietary. Okay, so that's a proprietary bit of business information. We don't want people investigating that. Well then, okay, let's throw out all the Dominion votes then, because if you can't investigate if it was honest or not, then what's the point? You always have to be able to check to go back. You always have to be able to go back and check and see if the weights and measures were jiggered with at all. There are many more things that I could say, but I want to leave room for questions.
Pastor Doug, so you mentioned the situation being so toxic right now, and even alluded to a story that you're kind of waiting to confirm. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a little bit of advice on all these things are flashing by our screen? Some of it's marked by Twitter or Facebook as that's not actually true, or there's more to the story. How do you even know what is true in this?
Anything that Twitter censors is true.
All Babylon
B articles. So I forgot to mention that. So we have all these disputes all over the country, and we don't know. You're looking at Michigan, or you're looking at Georgia, and you hear the claims and the counterclaims. It's a Proverbs 18:17 deal, right? One person seems real reasonable until you hear the other person come and give his side. Well, sometimes there are Proverbs 18:17 volleys, and it might be a good tennis volley back and forth, and there's a good answer, and then a good answer, and then a good answer, and you have to track the argument. So when you look at Georgia, you look at Pennsylvania, and say, this makes my head hurt. What do I do? Well, this is one of the tells, this is one of the arguments I would offer, is we don't know which side in this particular Georgia dispute is correct, but we do know which side is being censored. All right, we do know who's being told to shut up. And that, in a environment like ours today, should tell you something. So my sympathies are immediately with the censored. So big tech, Google and Twitter and Facebook, doing what they're doing to keep information from getting to the people, that means the thing that they want me to believe is true is getting up to the plate with two strikes already.
Yeah. One of the things that it kind of brings up this almost epistemological crisis of how do I even know anything, that it is a faith. Mm-hmm. Like, you're taking on faith certain things. So there's people who, they grew up watching CNN, or their parents grew up watching Fox News, and they just take on faith whatever is there on the screen. But it seems like, at least, especially this next generation, they didn't grow up maybe watching those news shows. They're not loyal, and they don't esteem them as trustworthy. Are there some places or things that Christians should be doing to recover or build a new trustworthiness when it comes to just delivering news?
Yeah, I think we need Christian journalists and Christian writers and Christian analysts who are willing to tell the truth even if it hurts the cause that they care about. And that's how you establish your credibility. You write and you handle. So if you're going into a debate with someone, you should, if I'm going to debate an atheist, I should be able to state his position before going into the debate in a way that he would be willing to own and say, yes, that's right, that's what I think. So if I can state his position honestly, then I have the right to debate with him. But if I'm misrepresenting him from the get-go, if I'm successful, he loses credibility. But if someone's watching me closely, I'm losing credibility. So I really believe that we need, because once you're discredited, the election night blew a hole in the side of Fox News. I don't know if you've been following that at all, but Fox News has been sort of the champion of the moderate center right voice. And that's what built Fox News into the juggernaut that it is. And then election night, they blew a hole in their credibility, not because they have occasional liberals on commenting, but because they called Arizona for Biden early in the evening and didn't call Texas for Trump until late. And it was like, what are you doing? You know, what are you people doing? What are you doing? And a bunch of people just walked, you know, they've called in, I've read they've called in a crisis management team to get their audience back because they broke faith with them. So when we're trying to be a Christian voice, don't break faith, tell the truth.
Yeah. We'll get to questions in just a sec. You're king for a day, or let's say president for a day. It was always a fun exercise.
And my joke is, what a glorious 3 days that would be.
Who in a kind of ideal situation, or maybe even just, actually, let me take that back, a not ideal situation. Let's just say the situation we're in right now. Who should vote, and how should those votes be cast and counted?
Okay, so I'm in charge of suffrage. I'm in charge of...
Yeah. You can say no women, only landowners, only people who make X amount of dollars, or everyone, you know, kids too.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that if in my ideal republic, I would say landowners, heads of household, landowners.
And why?
Because you don't want democracy to turn in, as a fellow once said, into three coyotes and a sheep voting on what to have for lunch. Because basically, if the voters have a stake in the nation that they're wanting to protect, then it's going to be stable. If you pushed the vote down to 18. Some people, I think, want it to go younger, 16. What you're doing is you're franchising people who have nothing to lose, right? Nothing to lose. So you've got all these kids with, college students who are Bernie brothers. They want free college. They want free chocolate milk. They want,
universal living wage.
Yeah, but that's not how the world works. That's not how God made the world. So Winston Churchill once said, if you're not a liberal when you're 18, you're hard-hearted. You've got a hard heart. But if you're not conservative when you're 40, you've got a soft head, yeah. Right? You need to learn how the world works. Yeah. And so I would only want Lydia in Philippi would be able to vote. She would be a head of household, landowner. Yeah. So I'd want households to vote, not individual people.
Okay. And could you just explain to this group of young people why it is that people tend to become more conservative as they get older?
It's basically experience. Experience teaches you a lot about how the world is. Conservatism is simply adapting to what God reveals about the world in His Word and what God reveals to us in His world by how the world runs. And I think that it's the school of hard knocks. So young people are oftentimes idealistic and they say, yes, wouldn't it be nice if everybody had $15 minimum wage? And then all of a sudden you've got all these restaurants in Seattle shutting down. Well, how did that happen? We were going to have unicorns. It was going to be fluffy clouds and unicorns. No.
Open it up for questions.
No.
You want to go ahead? Oh, I was just going to make a comment about Fox News. Do you think the fact that they're owned by Disney now has some impact on their credibility and what they'll be like? How much
who?
Disney.
Disney now owns Fox News.
Owns who?
Fox News.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You saw what they did to Star Wars.
Yeah, and basically what happened was the person who built it was Rupert Murdoch, and now I believe the decisions are being made by the next generation, and I think there's a daughter-in-law involved that wants to be woke or wants to... It's a lot of people, a lot of this goes down to how people function in junior high. If you're fabulously wealthy in New York and or Washington, D.C., and you can't get invited to a decent cocktail party because you're with Fox News, you're hungry for acceptance. And so I think that what you're saying, Disney might have something to do with it. I think the next generation, Rupert Murdoch not being there anymore, has something to do with it. Yeah. Yeah. I was talking about the election being thrown into the House. With Bush Gore, it was 2000, I think, year 2000. And Bush lost every court case all the way up until it got to the Supreme Court, and he won there. And he was the president. But that was settled in the courts. I think there was back in the 1800s, there was one time when the election was thrown into the House of Representatives. They can't live together in the same moment, right? But they can, I believe that you need to establish your credibility with everyone. He's a truth speaker. He can represent everybody fairly. You know, you establish that as the baseline. And once you've established your reputation, then you've got the credibility, you've got money in the bank that you can write checks on. So when Jesus mocks the Pharisees in Matthew 23, he does a demolition job on the Pharisees. Nobody thinks that Pharisaism is a good thing. For the last 2,000 years, the Pharisees were, there were about 6,000 Pharisees in Israel. They were one of the most highly respected groups in Israel at the time. People copied them, they imitated them, they wanted to be like them. They named their kids after them. And after Jesus was done with them, it was like Nazis. Right? Pharisaism is bad. And it was Jesus' mocking treatment of them. But when you go earlier and you see Jesus engaging with them in debate, his debates have substance. It's not just name calling.
Yeah, that's totally true, because he's facing this temple reasons with them.
Right.
Jonah.
So let's say all the lawsuits and everything that Trump's instigated go through, and either they're not enough to overturn the election, or there's fraud shown that is legitimate, and it's not enough to either overturn it, or the courts just don't deal with it.
Right.
And then Biden gets elected, but there's obvious fraud.
So we could, I didn't have time to get to this, but we might face that either way it goes. So number one, Biden could easily be inaugurated as the president with tens of millions of people believing that he cheated his way there. So he's going to have a greasy cloud over him the whole time. It's going to cripple his ability. He'll have the opposite of a mandate. And we'll have to figure out, can we say not my president, or what? You know, you can't say that just because you lost. But at some point, if it was manifestly illicit, manifestly unconstitutional, and you've proven that to your own satisfaction, then you're setting the stage. I think we're in the Cold War phase of a civil war. The shooting hasn't started yet. But I think that that's where that condition leads you. But the flip side is this. Many people don't know that in 2018, Trump signed an executive order, which I've read, and this was 2 years ago. He signed an executive order which declared that put the United States in a state of national emergency. And the national emergency was interference in American elections by foreign entities. Okay, so 45 days after the election, which is coming up in mid-December, the Attorney General, the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, and Homeland Security, I think, have to give a report to the President on whether there was such foreign interference, which if the Dominion China owns story is true, it's... So Trump has got us in a state of national emergency now. There have already been some voices urging him to declare martial law or to just say, I'm not leaving, right? And then we would have the same identical problem, only the other way, right? We would be we'd be in a country where the person running the show and living in the White House is what didn't get there constitutionally. Right, you don't get there by an executive order. That's not how it's done. So we're gonna be faced with that either way. I would say that one of the things we as Christians have to do is learn to think self-consciously as of ourselves as Christians first. Right, Americans second, Christians first, Americans second, and be devoting ourselves to worshiping God. Cultivating our relationships with other believers, getting our priorities right, and then asking God to deliver us from whichever mess we get in. Because I think it's going to be a mess either way. I think if Trump stays, there's going to be Antifa riots. And I think that if Biden is elected, I think there's going to be a significant unrest from the right.
Two quick questions. First off, in the case of a
allowing people to vote, if they're subsidized by the government, and like a farm owns land, has a household, but receives money from the government, would you still allow them to vote?
No.
And the second, what's the most egregious case that you've seen that makes you think, okay, this is flat out fraud?
The most egregious thing, so on the first one, I think that you should be not on welfare, not on subsidy payments, not getting anything from the government in order to be able to vote, because that's the coyotes and the sheep voting. So the most glaring, egregious thing about this is not, I don't have to go be a poll watcher in Pennsylvania peeking over someone's shoulder to tell if, did they cheat on that vote? I mean, this is an election, 150 million votes cast. I can't monitor all of those. You can't monitor all those. So what sorts of things can we tell from a distance? Sitting here in our seat in North Idaho. Well, here's something I can tell from a distance. In 2008, you remember when, you probably don't, you were, how old were you in 2008? They were eight. That's just not right. All right, I'll tell you. In 2008, it was Obama's first campaign. He was the messianic rock star. Okay, it was a hope and change election. He walked on water. He was going. He was just. People were all agog at his star power. So, and I was opposed to his policies, but there was no denying his star power. He was charismatic, he was fluent, he was quick on his feet, he was just, man. And he blew everybody away and won that election against McCain. He won the next one against Mitt Romney. Joe Biden ran a sleepwalkers campaign from his mom's basement, or maybe his own basement. He would stick his head out every few days. He would call a lid on campaign appearances. You never saw such a lackadaisical, anemic campaign in your life. It was, and they kept him off the trail because he's just a gaff machine. And let's keep him away from the microphones. So he scarcely did anything. He campaigned exactly like someone who was told he didn't have to campaign. We've got it in the bag. And not campaigning at all. You remember, and Trump was flying around the country, filling up stadiums, and I'm just saying this as a sociological observer. There was energy, there was mojo, there was enthusiasm, high levels of enthusiasm with Trump all over the country. And Biden peeks out every few days. Is it over yet? Is it over yet? And then Biden, doing it that way, outperformed Obama's 2008 performance by 10 million votes. All right, so he cleared 80 million votes, 10 million higher than Obama did at the apex of his messianic career, right? And I'm sorry, it just is not possible. That's just not possible. That is the comeback. Yeah, it wasn't a pro-Biden vote. It was an anti-Trump. It was anti-Trump energy, but that doesn't add up because Trump got more black votes than any Republican since 1960. He made major gains among Hispanic voters. In other words, all the groups that would be supposed to be hating on him the most. He did better than any other Republican has done in recent history. There were 19 bellwether counties, and there are people in political science departments who come up with these things. There are thousands of counties in the United States, but there are about 19 counties that have voted for the winner for the last half century. Okay? So, every time a president wins, those counties, those 19 counties, voted for the winner. They're called bellwether counties. Trump, this time, Trump carried 18 of the 19. Okay, things like that. And you say, hey, where are you? So you don't have to get, basically, my argument is, let the people on the ground get into the weeds and challenge this or that. You should analyze it with a Christian worldview from a distance and say, what sorts of things can I look at from a distance that can tell me what's going on? And so I do believe that Biden forces stole the election. I do believe that it was a fraudulent election. But I also believe that Trump is a flawed character and likely would have accused them of cheating even if they hadn't. But I also believe that he was ready for them, and I'm keeping my eye on that executive order because I'm worried about it both ways. I'm worried about a Biden presidency, and I'm worried about a Trump presidency because I don't think Christians are ready for the challenges that are going to be thrown at us in the next turbulent 4 years.
All right, well, why don't we thank Pastor Doug for joining us.